Germ warfare is Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Germ warfare at tntradio.live. That is my email address, germwarfare at tntradio.live. Send me a message, question, feedback, anything you like, doesn't matter. Thank you, by the way, for all the emails I have been getting. I really appreciate the kind words and the feedback. And yes, it is true. I do enjoy diverse conversations with different guests. It doesn't mean I agree with all of them simply because I'm talking to them. But the greater battle of ideas means engaging with people you don't necessarily agree with. I think we're entering a weird zeitgeist in which you simply cannot talk to people because they have a different opinion to you. It's very strange. And that's part of what cancel culture is about. It's about shutting down those with whom you disagree. It's a tragedy. And by the way, please download the TNT app. It is available in the Google and Apple store. That means you can listen to my show or any of my colleagues' shows whenever you like. So basically, the live show becomes podcastable. I don't know if that's a word, podcastable. If it isn't a word, I just made it up. But I think you get what I mean by it. I'm going to be chatting to, without a doubt, my favorite cartoonist in the world. And it's such a great pleasure to chat on the rare occasion to a cartoonist because there are so few of us. And I don't know actually if I'm correct. I don't know if there are so few of us. I think most cartoonists are just pretty useless at communication. I don't know what it is about creative people. At least the ones with whom I engage tend to be very bad at communication. They have completely corrupt or inept abilities to use a computer. I don't know. It's weird. It's like this strange. It's very embarrassing. I mean, I'm a cartoonist, and I have to like try and take a stand for this disaster that is my fraternity. Anyway, let me get to my guest. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare on TNT Radio.
The latest news, traffic, and weather right to your smart speaker.
I listen on Alexa.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be actually chatting to a cartoonist who knows how to use Zoom. Bob Moran, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Hi, Germ. Nice to speak to you again. I've only just managed to get the computer turned on, and you're exactly right. I'm hopeless at all of this stuff. I really am. And I think I always feel a bit guilty using Zoom or anything because it's one of those things that we're supposed to be rallying against. But you're so right. I'm awful at anything to do with technology and communicating in this way. I feel like I want to live in a world where I have a cage of carrier pigeons by my desk and I do a little picture and send them off. That's how I communicate.
Yeah, but I mean, what is it with our colleagues? I mean, they draw something and then fax it. I mean, who faxes stuff these days?
Oh yeah, I'm not that bad. I wouldn't ever fax something. Well, there was a time when cartoonists in this country, they would, if they're working for a magazine or a paper in London and they were outside London, they'd have to get it done in time to take their picture to the train up to London and hand it to somebody on the train. It would get to London and they'd put it in the newspaper. I don't know why, because our world, our industry has been made so much easier. It's so much more open because of all this technology. I can live where I want now and I can just do my work and scan it and email it to whoever needs it. But I'm still a bit of a Luddite when it comes to this stuff.
Well, look, as I was saying to you previously when we last chatted, you have taken top position in at least my favorite cartoonist rankings. So before I saw your work, about a year ago, my favorite cartoonist was Scott Adams. of Dilbert fame, and not necessarily purely because of Dilbert only. I mean, Dilbert is pretty badly drawn, but it's everything that Scott Adams represents made him my favorite cartoonist. Made him my favorite cartoonist. Sorry, I had my pronouns all the wrong around, and these days pronouns are a thing, aren't they?
Careful but with you your pronouns have now, there, yeah.
Yes. But you have now become my favorite cartoonist, and it's not because I'm chatting to you, it's because your work is just so damn good.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind. You know, it's interesting because so many people who now follow me had never heard of me a few years ago. You know, that's, I guess, because I was working for a specific UK newspaper, and people outside of that audience, that readership, don't get to see your work or aren't really interested in what you're doing. And now it still feels odd. I've suddenly gained this really quite big international following. I never imagined getting to that point. My career was going to be quite different until the end of last year. So it's a big change.
Well, there you go. Technology has now brought us together, you see. And so. And you didn't have to fax me your cartoons.
No. It's just the press of a button. But I try to resist it all. You know, all my work is done traditionally, and I use paints and inks and make a mess. And this morning I've actually been outside chopping firewood and getting all my logs ready for winter. So I'm feeling quite primitive and caveman-y today.
Well, we'll come back to that. For those who don't know you, what is your background?
So I'm British cartoonist, and I've been working as a professional cartoonist for 12 years now in the UK. And I started out, I did a degree in illustration, but sort of concentrated on political satire, and began working for, I was just freelance, and occasionally I do work for publications, mainly left-wing publications in the UK, like The Morning Star and The Guardian. And then in 2011, I started working regularly for the Daily Telegraph, which is a conservative newspaper in the UK. And I was there for 10 years and eventually became their main cartoonist. And at the end of last year, I was fired for a sort of...
Congratulations.
I'm in the club. And... it was sort of a combination of reasons, but basically for being opposed to everything that's been going on over the past couple of years. And now I'm back to being freelance. But I'm working with a charity called the Democracy Fund, which is based in Canada. Not to be confused with the American Democracy Fund, by the way, which is a completely different thing with very different values and sponsors and all the rest of it. And I now produce 3 cartoons a week that I make available free through my website to any publisher, any blog, any website, magazine. Anybody who wants to use it can download a high-res version free of charge.
Do you feel more free now?
Yeah, it's a massive change. I have some guidelines I need to follow in terms of subject matter, but there's really no editorial input anymore. You know, I don't have to get a green light on my ideas. There's really no editorial interference. And so the work I'm putting out is 100% me now, which is, to begin with, it's frightening because for years you've been slightly, I guess, leaning on this crutch of editors, and there's been more of collaboration, so you don't feel entirely responsible always. But to start with, I was like, I'm completely on my own now. It's just up to me. And so it's quite daunting, but I think I was pretty much ready. I mean, 10 years working for a for a newspaper and working with editors, you learn so much and you go through so many different news cycles. And I'm really happy with where I am now. And another great thing about it is I've got no idea where I'll go next. You know, I don't know what I'm doing now. It might last for another 6 months, another year. Might last longer, but I could be doing something completely new in a couple of years. So that's exciting.
You mean something completely new, like becoming an accountant?
No. I'll always be doing cartoons, but I just mean, you know, the whole world has opened up in terms of who I could be working with and working for, and the type of work I might be producing.
It's interesting. This last 2.5 years or so has been remarkably catastrophic, damaging, harmful, and negative in every conceivable way. And yet the silver lining, Bob, the silver lining is that new networks have been created. You and I are now talking, for example. New friendships have been created and new types of work opportunities have arisen.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's amazing because so many of the people who, the new friends I've made and these new contacts you end up making, you realize that in the before times, you know, in the old world, it's not just that your paths might not have crossed, but you might not have been interested in those people. You might have dismissed them and thought, oh, they're on the other side, or they're part of a different group. You know, I'm not in that world. And the incredible thing is, it's in a way, it's whittled everything down to these basic fundamental values of what's important. And there's this group of us that have held on to that and realized that we want to fight for them. And that's more important, I think, than any kind of largely fake political divide that the establishment tries to push on people. You know, it's the left and right thing is, especially in the UK, I think, is sort of proven itself to be largely false. And there are people from both those different sides have come together over the past couple of years and realize they have so much in common and actually want exactly the same things for their children and for society. It's not all gloom despair. You know, there's so many positive things. But it's just all happening very quickly, isn't it? All these changes. It's there's a strange thing happening with time racing by, and so much is happening and your world seems to be changing day by day, and you're meeting new people and losing friends as well.
Have you lost
roller coaster
friends?
Oh yeah, for sure. I've lost a lot of friends. Not necessarily through arguments, just people stop getting in touch, you know. You just stop hearing from people. You don't get invited to a wedding or whatever it is, and you kind of think,
because you're
okay,
not jabbed.
I get it. Yeah, in some cases it's been that. And it's
now, these
difficult.
Days you have to be careful. Sorry for interrupting, but these days you have to be careful if you ask the question, have you lost friends? Because like, what you mean, did they die?
or just misplace them. No, I mean, friendships, people who are still alive as far as I know. Yeah. And but some of them were my closest friends, you know, lifelong friends. It's very hard because, like I was saying before, these values, these principles on which we're fighting seem so fundamental. And when you suddenly discover that these people you were friends with for 15, 20 years don't share them at all, don't appear to share them. And when you say, but this is why I'm opposed to all this, they don't seem to care, or they think you're mad. Yeah. You start to wonder why you were ever friends in the first place, you know? And then you realize, well, we've never been through something like this. Nothing like this has ever happened before. So none of this stuff was tested. But part of me thinks, I don't know. I don't want to believe that these people were always so morally blind and so easily led. I think to some extent something's happened, some combination of whatever you want to call it, propaganda, behavioral science, or dark magic, you know, some kind of spell has been woven, and there's just this group of us for some reason who were immune and others just weren't. Yeah. So sometimes you have to be careful about blaming, to what extent you blame the other side.
Yes.
For going along with it, you know.
Bob, I'll come back to that. I have to just quickly go to a break. I'll be back with you now.
You should hear what Mark Morano is talking about.
Checkbook journalism. Bought and paid for climate news. NPR, National Public Radio, here in the United States, has announced, drumroll please, that Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg and the Rockefeller Foundation will be funding NPR's new climate desk. Yes, you heard that right. Zuckerberg and Rockefeller are going to be paying for what we call press releases on climate change. And they'll be coming at you from taxpayer-supported NPR.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds. And they do it by the types of hosts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
Instead of putting a cracker under a politician, why not some TNT?
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Bob Moran, back with you. Bob, sounds like an old man's name. We've laughed about this before. But yep. since nobody can see you right now, let me just tell everybody that you are a 75-year-old man.
I'm hoping that my voice doesn't sound that geriatric either. Yeah, so because my name is Bob and because I worked for the Telegraph newspaper for 10 years, which has a kind of average subscriber age of about 92, it was assumed for a long time that I was a very old man. And I think this worked in my favor at the beginning of my career, and colleagues said, don't ever let anyone see a picture of you. Let them think you're really old like they are, because otherwise they might stop liking your work as much. And then when all of this started and I was speaking out and I was tweeting more, and obviously that attracts all these new critics and people getting very angry, I realized reading some of the comments that, you know, the classic, okay, boomer, you're so selfish. You just want to go to the pub with your geriatric mates and things like this. And I thought, it was funny to an extent, but I thought it will probably have quite an impact if I let people know that I'm not this old fart who's annoyed that the pub is closed. And it was interesting because when I started to put pictures out of myself and videos and things, quite a lot of that went away. A lot of the trolls went quiet because they realized they were shouting at a completely different person. But as still, every time I put a picture of myself at my desk or whatever, I get these, you know, oh my goodness, I thought you were 75 years old. I can't believe you're that young. I mean, I'm not that young anymore. I'm 36 now. But it's about half the age a lot of people assume I am. And they say nice things. Some people are very nice. They say, oh, it's because your work has so much wisdom in it. That's why we assume you're so old. And maybe I do have an old soul. I don't know.
Well, do you have any silvers?
Do I have any what, sorry?
Do you have any silvers? Do you have any gray hair? Maybe that can help your age.
No, not just a few in my eyebrows. That's all I've got at the moment.
What a weird place to have gray hair.
Yeah, I know. It's peculiar. And they've only sprouted over the past couple of years from the stress of it all, I guess. I'd quite like some gray hair. I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Well, it goes with the name Bob.
Yeah. Yeah, it does, absolutely.
As we've established.
I mean, it's fair enough. I don't know. I know a few other people called Bob, and they are all 60, 70 years old. You know, I've never met anyone else my age called Bob. So fair enough.
they just appeared out of nowhere. They didn't have a young life.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, they were just sent to Earth as middle-aged men.
Well, because it's Friday, let's talk some fun stuff. When I chatted to you last, I didn't ask you something that I've been meaning to ask you. Do you have cartoons just off the top of your head that are your favorite?
That's quite a tricky one. Because some of them I like because of the impact they've had, you know, and that I feel that they've spread far and wide and meant a lot to people. And then others I like because I felt particularly pleased with them, you know, with the idea. And they're not always the ones that everyone loves the most. I don't know. I mean, and then part of me thinks, is it wrong to have favorites? Because they're a bit like children, I guess. But the Stand Firm demon one with the syringe is has had the most impact, I think. So I'm fond of that. But at the same time, it's one of the darkest things I've done. And doing those types of cartoons are almost unpleasant. It's not an entirely enjoyable process because you have to put yourself into quite a dark frame of mind. And the ones I enjoy are the stuff that's funny with a dark edge, you know, and I always like doing a strip, like a short strip where there's a story. Those are the ones I think I enjoy doing most of all. I did one, a few weeks back of a chap who just got vaccinated and then immediately dies and is being called towards the light. And when he gets to the light, it's a giant Twitter misinformation warning. those are the ones I like doing the best.
It's so dark.
It's hard to get that balance right, you know, between dark subject matter and still getting people to laugh at it.
I love this one, Bob, that's in front of me now. It's one of my favorite of yours. It's the rocker holding his guitar, and on his face it says "Stick it to the man," and he's got a big middle finger up. And then in the next frame, it's the same rocker, but he's wearing a mask. And his vest says "Stick it in my arm," and he's got a Ukrainian flag on his guitar, and he's holding up his health pass. I mean, that's essentially Rage Against the Machine in a nutshell, raging with the machine.
Yeah, exactly. And there are others as well. And that one was something that, you know, sometimes it's something I noticed right from the beginning, that these kind of rock stars and I guess other comedians and satirists as well have, you know, you're thinking, where are they? And they've ended up doing the opposite. Because, of course, Rage Against the Machine were insisting on vaccination certificates for their concerts, weren't they?
Yeah.
The most ludicrous thing you've ever heard. And but then it suddenly realized, well, I haven't done a cartoon about it. Why haven't I done a cartoon? I think sometimes it's because I'm still in this mindset of I need to do something political or you know, because working for the newspaper, I'd have never commented on music, the music industry or anything like that. So that one came quite late. That's, you know, it's a fairly recent one, that, but I could have done it at any point, I suppose, over the past couple of years. Yeah, I mean, I love music and I love a lot of those bands. I used to love Rage Against the Machine, and it's been a disappointing couple of years in that way, hasn't it?
Well, absolutely, yes. Okay, Bob, I'll be back with you after these news headlines.
Darren Metzer here with a look at your TNT headlines. North Korea has denied US intelligence reports that it was preparing to sell millions of artillery shells and rockets to Russia, and accused Washington of spreading reckless rumors. Russian and Western diplomats have clashed over alleged war crimes in Ukraine, during a heated meeting of the United Nations Security Council. And parts of Australia's east coast are again underwater following yet another round of heavy rainfall.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk. TNT Radio. TNT Radio.
I love this cartoon of yours, Bob, with this blue-haired guy with a beard wearing a red dress, and he's doing a painting of a blonde, naked woman.
How do you know it's a guy, Jem? What do you mean?
Oh, well, I'm not a biologist, so you're right. I don't know. I'm assuming. Okay, so since this is an audio, since this is live radio, I'll have to describe. Well, actually, how about you describe the cartoon?
Yeah, describing cartoons. I mean, this doesn't always work very well. This was a problem I used to have with the newspaper. You know, if you couldn't get a sketch scanned in, you have to phone up and say, oh, let me describe it to you. But yeah, it's like a life drawing studio kind of art class situation, and there's an obvious woman posing to be painted on a chair without any clothes on, and then there is a man who thinks he's a woman with blue hair and a dress on and an easel in front of
and
him.
A beard.
But he's painted an empty chair instead of the woman. In the way that, you know, well, the comment's obvious, I hope, but the way that the trans movement is essentially trying to cancel the idea of women.
I think it's very funny. I just love her. I love her expression. And what amazes me, though, is the fact that she is completely naked. In a newspaper, I don't know if you can get away with that still.
Oh, no, definitely not. I mean, it's funny that a lot of the things I put out now are the kind of ideas I used to, in happier times, I would sketch and send to my editors just to wind them up, you know, so I knew they were going to say no. And they kind of freak out. Go, we can't do this. We can't possibly. And I'd say, yeah, I know, it's fine. I'll chuck a bra on her or whatever. But now it's good because sometimes these things just make the joke funnier. And so,
yes,
you can get away with it. And like I say, I'm offering it all free to publishers. And so it's entirely up to them if they think it's too rude, if they don't want to have, you know, naked boobies in their newspaper, they can just decide not to publish that one.
Do you have any cartoons that you look at that make you cringe, or you look at and you go, oh no, I wouldn't draw that now?
Yes. I mean, certainly that would be true if I were to look back over my newspaper career. You know, either I obviously got that wrong, or I wouldn't draw that, or that gag didn't really work. At the moment, that, you know, the last couple of years, there isn't really much I feel that way about. Always you look back and you think you can see little mistakes, or you can see things that, you know, I wish I'd done that slightly differently, or I'd used a different color, you know, technical stuff like that. I always have, even the day after I've put something out, you know, and I think that's important because you've got to be your own worst critic, I think. Because every time you sit down to do the next one, you've got to be trying to do something better.
Are you saying you're only as good as your last cartoon?
Well, to an extent, I suppose, although, you know, the thing about cartooning is you are always governed by events, right, to a degree. And so a cartoon, if a massive event happens that's hugely significant to people and you do a cartoon about that, and then a couple of days later, you might do a cartoon that's technically, satirically, just as good or better, but the subject matter just isn't as huge. And so people won't regard it as good a cartoon, if that makes sense. So there's always that factor. But yeah, I mean, I have this weird thing where I'm fully aware that I will never draw a cartoon that's so amazing, you know, that Klaus Schwab looks at it and just goes, I give up. There's no point. Just abandon the whole thing. I can't do it anymore. You know, that's, I don't have that power.
Put me on the train.
Yeah. Oh, this guy, look what he's done to me. I just forget about it. Let them carry on with their petrol cars. At the same time, part of me has to be a bit naive and always believe that that's possible, right? Because it makes me, I have to put everything into it. I have to think there's a tiny chance that I could do a cartoon so great that it would make them all just abandon their plans, you know? I mean,
no conversation with, correct. No conversation with a cartoonist is complete without the obligatory, how do you draw question.
Yeah, how do I draw? So, do you mean
let me ask you a different question. Take me through a very quick day in the life of Bob Moran on a Sunday.
Okay. On a Sunday? Well, yeah, not on a Sunday. We did this the other day, didn't we? Yeah, I don't tend to draw on a Sunday. A drawing day is... it's quite different now, obviously. I had a very strict routine working for a newspaper because you've got that tight deadline every day. But I still try and be quite disciplined and get a cartoon done in a day. So I'll come up to my studio, which is up here in the attic, and I can lock the door to stop children invading sometimes, and have a look at the news and... which is largely alternative news media, obviously, and social media channels, and just have a think about, I mean, usually I have two or three themes in my head already that I've been playing with for a few days, and I'll just start sketching and see what works. Because quite often, you know what you want to say, and you can even think of a good joke, but then visualizing it can be the tricky bit, coming up with one clean image. Or a neat little story in a strip is the hard bit. And then once I think I've got something that works, I will put on a podcast, you know, like Germ Warfare or something like that. No, seriously, I do. You know, I've listened to your podcast before when I've been producing my stuff. So, then I'll draw it out in pencil, I work on high quality watercolor paper, so I'll draw the thing out in pencil, and then I use a brush to go over the line with Indian ink, and then I use concentrated watercolor inks to paint it. So it's all done in a very old-fashioned, messy way, and then I'll scan it into my computer and just do a little bit of production, post-production work on Photoshop, just to kind of boost the colors and clean it up.
But Bob, your watercolor is out of this world. I mean, it is so crisp.
Thanks. That's really nice of you to say, because the color is the bit I really struggled with for years. I'm a natural line person, and for a long time I really couldn't get my head around color and the right way to do it. And that's the bit I've had to work hard on, you know, or I've had to work hardest on, I suppose, the color thing. But part of it now, I realize, is finding the right materials, you know, that suits the way you want to work. It's getting the right paper and the right paints and the right brushes. And then you're away, you know.
I mean, I've got some of your cartoons open in front of me. And it's, you know, unless you said that you did that watercolor by hand, I would have thought that is digital. It is so precision. It's beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. And I did do my color digitally for the first few years. And, you know, because when you go and do an art course now, if you go to art college, that's kind of, they just push you in that direction. It's kind of like, this is the way you have to work, because it's what people expect. And I never really got on with it. And it wasn't that I couldn't do it. I just didn't like the results. It just didn't feel like me. And so I had to kind of, this was after I started working for the Telegraph, actually, I had to begin to sort of completely change my process and my way of working, because I thought I need to shift to traditional color.
There are two people whose watercolor I admire immensely. It's you and Quentin Blake. And both of you are British.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting you say that, because actually one of my tutors at art college was taught by Quentin Blake. So there is a link.
Oh, really?
There.
Wow.
Yeah. And Quentin Blake, I've never met Quentin Blake, but yeah, sounded like a pretty amazing character.
Is he still
alive? Tutor said they would sometimes go out drinking, and he would come with them, and he told this story about how when Quentin Blake has had a few too many, every time he just pretends to be a frog. And Quentin Blake is a very old chap, and so he should probably be called Bob as well. But and he's very, very small. And this guy said it was just hilarious to, is this group of students with this kind of little old man hopping about going ribbit, ribbit, after he'd had a few beers.
And he kind of looks like a frog if you look him up.
Yeah,
on the
internet, he does. And if you know, he draws a lot of frogs in his work. He obviously, he has a thing about frogs. And when he gets drunk enough, he thinks he is one.
Oh, imagine having worked with him. Roald Dahl particularly, hey? They must have had such a great relationship. Do you only do political stuff? Or do you do kids' books and other type of cartoon illustration work?
I've done, at the beginning of my career, I sort of wanted to branch into children's book stuff as well. And I did a few bits and pieces, but I never really got anywhere. I wasn't anywhere near as passionate about that as I was about the newspaper and political stuff. But something some people have said recently that I hadn't really picked up on is that a lot of my work, even the quite darkly satirical stuff, that in terms of the visuals, it wouldn't look out of place in a children's book. And so you end up with this weird juxtaposition of kind of soft, gentle draftsmanship that almost lulls you into a false sense of security, because then the message is really quite savage sometimes. So I would definitely like to go into that kind of thing more in the future. Yeah. I'll see what opportunities come up.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Every cartoonist that I know has this goal of wanting to become a children's book illustrator. I also do. It's like,
yeah,
but it's all inverted. If you're a musician, your goal is to become, you know, I don't know, a jazz musician or like the best guitar soloist in the world or something, right? Yeah, we're going backwards. Yeah. Oh, we want to draw for kids.
It's, I mean, it's also not that there aren't that many children's book illustrators who really get that famous, even really amazing ones, you know. Mm. And it's a very different world. I mean, you're constantly collaborating, obviously, with other people.
Yeah.
And like you said about Quentin Blake and Roald Dahl, you have to, if you're lucky enough to find a writer who you really gel with and whose work really inspires you, then you can create something really magical. Although I don't necessarily know how well they got on as friends or anything. I don't know that they actually met each other very much. Roald Dahl's kind of notorious for being quite an unpleasant man in real life.
Difficult.
And it sounds like Quentin Blake was the opposite. He sounded like a, you know,
a
jolly chap. Yeah.
All right, Bob, I have to quickly do my last ad break. I'll be back with you in a moment.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Well, what do you know? Finally, a so-called progressive who worked up the nerve to fire back, verbally, of course, at a member of the famed squad. He's 75-year-old Gerald Nadler, who's been representing New York in the Congress forever, and who recently beat another longtime Democrat House member, Carolyn Maloney, as two districts merged into one. This after Maloney called Nadler senile. He fired back after Michigan Democrat Rashida Tlaib announced, "I want you all to know that among progressives, it's become clear you cannot claim to hold progressive values yet back Israel's apartheid government." She said this during an online seminar. Nadler followed that with a tweet saying, "I fundamentally reject the notion that one cannot support Israel's right to exist as a Jewish and democratic state and be a progressive." Now, it may not seem like much, but it stands out in a Democrat Party that's been willing to stand by and let Israel be bashed and bashed over and over again, apparently out of fear of incurring the wrath of the squad members. Well, let's see how many more are willing to follow Nadler's brave lead. My prediction? Nobody. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
The Congo provides 60% of the world's cobalt. Children as young as 7 breathe in cobalt-laden dust so you can drive an electric vehicle. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Got a message here from Donna, who's listening, and she says, "I thought T was 75 for a moment, but with a really young voice."
Oh, thank you, Donna. You're not the first, and you won't be the last.
You know, you should just own it.
You know, I hope I'll be doing this for a very long time, and I will reach a point where I am the age where everyone assumes I am now. And then I guess I'll still be desperately trying to convince people I'm in my mid-30s.
Bob, who do you read in terms of cartoons? And let's go back to some good old classics. For example, I grew up loving Asterix and Garfield.
Oh, yeah, me
and
too.
And the Warner Brothers, the Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck. And, you know, in the days where a character could fall off a cliff and a piano fell on top of him and then he'd pull out a cigar.
Yeah, there's the kind of stuff that couldn't get made now, the hilariously violent slapstick. Tom and Jerry as well. I used to love watching Tom and Jerry, and Popeye was another favorite of mine. My parents, I think, still have loads and loads of Popeye drawings. I was obsessed with drawing Popeye, and it was the first character. I don't know if you do this, but I used to learn to draw cartoon characters off by heart, and then I'd use it as a kind of trick to make friends at school and things, because I could draw Popeye or Fred Flintstone or whoever it was, you know, without looking at a picture, which people thought was really cool. And the first character I did that with was Popeye. And I love the Asterix books, and I was actually saying to my wife this morning, we should buy some Asterix books for our children, because I suddenly realized we don't have any in the house. And I suppose in terms of cartoonists who do the kind of work I'm doing, Norman Thelwell was quite a big influence. I don't know if you know Norman Thelwell's work. He's most famous for doing horse riding, you know, ride pony club type stuff, but he also did some more social commentary work as well. And he also has that very gentle style, that a bit like what I try to go for. And then the big one for me as a teenager was Gerald Scarfe. You know, when I was introduced to Gerald Scarfe, that was a really kind of wake up moment for me. And I actually went to see him give a lecture in my local town about his career and his work. And that was the moment, I suppose. I was about 14. And that was the moment where I thought, oh, I think this is what I'm supposed to do. You know,
he was a great cartoonist.
Yeah. He came about at this time in the 1960s when the whole idea of satirical magazines and newspaper cartoonists was really taking off, because, you know, the big newspapers in this country hadn't really had regular cartoons until the 1960s. And that was when Gerald Scarfe came along, and some of his early work is amazing in its savagery and its detail.
And its style.
And his style, and he just kind of ended up, it got more and more minimal as he got older, I guess. But he has this instantly recognizable style. And I think for a long time, the trouble was I tried to mimic his style too much, and I just couldn't do it, you know, and didn't suit me at all. I had to learn to let that go and work out what my own thing was.
That's a very interesting sub-conversation that you just had there, because I was always taught. In fact, I actually also went to art school. Although, would you believe it, I failed art school. Who failed? Bob, who fails art school?
Well, I think anyway. I only just scraped pass, actually. So maybe it's something about cartoonists.
But I remember I was taught, find somebody who you admire and copy them. And eventually your own style will develop. But you need a foundation.
Yeah. I think that works to an extent. But if you go to art school having never really done much art before, you know, that could work. But I'm someone who has drawn, you know, I was just drawing since I could hold a pen. It's what I'd always done. Yeah. So the problem is you already have your own visual style, but you don't necessarily recognize it. You don't know that when you're a certain age. So when somebody said, I mean, I remember hearing something similar. Oh yeah, find someone you really like and try and mimic their style. But the artist you like isn't necessarily going to be in line with what you're already doing. You know, the problem is the way Gerald Scarfe works and the look of his drawings is vastly different to what I naturally do. And so it didn't really help trying to mimic him or Ralph Steadman and other people like that. You know, it's, I guess
Steadman
that's the,
was great.
It's the dream. The idea of a cartoonist is flicking ink and stabbing the paper and doing those kind of visceral images. But it wasn't who I was, you know, it wasn't what I was supposed to do. But then I think it's a good skill to have anyway, to be able to copy other styles, not in the sense that sometimes you'll get people contact you and say, oh, we'd like to commission a piece or an illustration, but we want it done in the style of this other illustrator. And you just say to them, we'll commission them then. Because I don't, you know, but sometimes working for the newspaper, you would do things where it would be a pastiche, you know, it would be a lighthearted take on, say, Winnie the Pooh. So you need to copy E.H. Shepherd or something like that. And that's always good fun if you kind of do it unapologetically.
Yeah, it's a parody.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, same with Disney or The Simpsons or any of those things.
It's a device that cartoonists use.
Yeah, it's part of the toolbox. It's not something I do so much now that I'm not at the newspaper. And part of the reason for that is you don't have the same legal protections as when you work for a paper, you know. So if I was ever doing something like that, working for the paper, and the editors liked it, they'd send me to the lawyer's office first. And, you know, they'd say, go and check with the lawyers that this is going to be okay, particularly if it was Disney, because Disney are apparently notorious for trying to sue people.
We have, I'm just looking at the time now, we've got about 3 minutes. So I suppose we have to come in for a landing, Bob. All right, let's do the boring stuff. Okay, so where can I follow your work?
I'm on Twitter, at Bob's Cartoons. Getter, I try and post on Getter when I remember as well. Telegram as Bob Moran. And I can't post on Facebook anymore. They've cancelled me. But my best place is actually my website, which is bobmoran.co.uk. And you can download my cartoons. You can see everything I've done on there. You can download the cartoons if you're any kind of publisher. And you can also buy prints, and my originals are for sale on there as well.
And you're also a great troll because you have a massive email address that doesn't work.
Yeah, I'm having trouble with my email at the moment.
Guys,
I spent
email
all day
me.
Yesterday trying to sort it out. Yeah.
It ends up in the void somewhere.
Yeah. And like we said at the beginning, I'm not the man to deal with these kind of things. So yeah, I was kind of hopelessly trying to alter DNS or something on my domain. I don't really know what on earth I'm doing, but it hasn't worked. So my emails still aren't getting through.
All right, quickly, just before we go, give me some absolutely terrible advice for the weekend.
Some terrible advice for the weekend. Don't use any cash. Whenever you can, pay with contactless. Pay with your card or your phone if you can, okay, wherever possible. If you've got any cash in your house, get rid of it. That's my advice.
I like it. It's better than having a pig in the freezer.
Yeah. Yeah. Still got about 700 sausages to get through.
Yeah, that is very delicious, though. Did you shoot it yourself?
No, we didn't do that bit ourselves. No, we sent them off to do that bit. But
okay,
we're building up to that. Maybe next time.
Right. Well, I go hunting. That's what I was asking.
Well, yeah, I'm not fully armed as yet.
Right.
Put it that way. Yeah.
Bob Moran, thank you for joining me.
It's very tricky at
the
moment in this country to get licenses and
yes.
things. So.
Okay, let me do my closing again. Bob Moran, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
Thanks, Jem. Great to be with you.
It's great to be with you too. Thank you, Luke, for keeping everything going and for pushing all the buttons. And thank you for listening to me. My name is Jerm. This is Jerm Warfare, the Battle of Ideas on TNT Radio.